Does Texas have one of the five best offensive line units in the country? Three think so.
You are Locked On Longhorns, your daily podcast on the Texas Longhorns. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
David, your host. Today's episode of Locked On Longhorns is brought to you by FanDuel Sportsbook, the official sportsbook of Locked On. Make every moment more. Visit FanDuel.com/lock today to get started. On today's episode of Locked On Longhorns, we are talking about On3's top 10 offensive line rankings. They have Texas at number 5. Did they get it right? But more importantly, will Texas live up to that ranking this season? Then we're talking about the Texas basketball team. I think, a really good sign that Tyrese Hunter might be returning to the 40 acres next season. And last but not least, we're talking about the Texas baseball team, who won 10-5 last night against UT Arlington. All of that and more on today's episode of Locked On Longhorns, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. But first, we're going to talk about On3's top 10 offensive line units heading into the 2023 season. Just want to give a quick shout out to On3, period, for putting these lists together. It's been really cool to see how they rank these different units across the country. Also, it's been great for content, right? They're giving me something to come on here and ramble for 8 to 10 minutes about every day. So we've talked about the top 10 quarterback rooms in the country. Texas came in at number 3 behind USC and LSU. We've talked about the top 10 wide receiver rooms in the country on this show. Texas came in at number 2 behind Ohio State. I've also seen lists for top 10 running back rooms. Texas was not on it. Top 10 defensive line units. Texas was not on that. Top 10 linebacker units. Texas was not on that. Top 10 defensive coordinators, Texas wasn't on there. I thought Pete Kwiatkowski could have got some consideration. And then top 10 offensive coordinators, Sark technically isn't our offensive coordinator, so it made sense why he wasn't on that list. When we talk about the offensive line units, Texas does come in at number 5, and I thought that was really interesting. But what I think is even more interesting is when you look at every team or unit in this top 10, you can tie it directly to team success, right? And you know, we talk so much about how football now is 7-on-7 and it's spread out and, you know, teams are just throwing the ball all over the field, which is true. But the play in the trenches still determines which teams are good at football and which teams don't have the seasons that they desire. When you look at this top 10 list, they have Georgia coming in at number 1. Georgia has won the last 2 national championships. Can't do that without having a really good offensive line. Michigan has won the award for the best offensive line in the country 2 years in a row. They've also been to 2 straight college football playoff appearances, 2 straight wins against Ohio State. You need a really good offensive line to do that. Notre Dame, it feels like they've been putting offensive linemen in the league since I was a kid before that, right? And I'm a Cowboys fan. Zach Martin went to Notre Dame. That's the only argument I need to hear, right? For Notre Dame being at number 3, regardless of who's on the line going into the 2023 season. LSU, I think they had 2 true freshmen starting on the line last year. That worked out for them. Obviously, they won the SEC West and went to the SEC Championship game. LSU is going to be really good this year. Texas at number 5. We'll come back to that. Alabama didn't have the year they last year, but obviously just the dominance over the Nick Saban era. A large part of that has been because of their play in the trenches and the offensive line. And I mean, they still only lost 2 games last year, right? So what a down year for Alabama. Utah at number 7. They won the Pac-12. USC at 8. They had the Heisman winner at quarterback and was 1 game away from winning the Pac-12 and going to the college football playoff. Florida State, I'm not sure if they won the ACC last year, but they were one of the best teams in the ACC and the favorite to win it this season, probably over Clemson. And then Kansas State won the Big 12 last season. So those are the top 10 offensive line units heading into the 2023 season for On3. And as you can see, all 10 of those units had success on the field last year. When you talk about Texas being ranked number 5 and do I think they got this ranking right, I'm not sure if Texas is going to be the 5th best offensive line unit in the country this year. And I think what's more important than them having the talent to be recognized as the 5th best offensive line unit is playing like the 5th best offensive line unit. And I'm not sure if they're there yet, but I do understand the ranking because one, you brought back all 5 starters on your offensive line. And that is such a blessing and such a rarity in college football, right? And so to be able to say I brought back all 5 starters on my offensive line from last year, even if all 5 of them don't start, you're miles ahead of almost every other team in college football, right, in terms of returning all five starters. Another reason why it makes sense to give Texas the number five ranking is because it's not just solely based off pass production, but it's based off talent in the room. And in the last two recruiting cycles, Texas has brought in seven blue chip offensive linemen in just the last two cycles. Blue chip meaning five and four stars. You'd be hard pressed. Not even hard pressed, you won't find another school that's brought in 7, 5, and 4-star offensive linemen in just the last two recruiting classes. So in terms of talent in the room and Texas going 8-5 last season, coming off of a 5-7 season, it would make sense why Texas would be number five on this list in terms of offensive line units going into the season. You also have a bona fide superstar on the offensive line in Kelvin Banks, right? And I know none of us are just watching offensive line play as much as we should, you know, and so a lot of times name recognition goes a long way in grading offensive lines, and you definitely have that in Kelvin Banks, who's probably one of the 2 to 3 best left tackles in the sport right now. But I don't think this is the fifth best offensive line unit in the country right now based on what we saw from this unit last year, and I think they have the potential to be one of the five best this season and moving forward, but it's going to take a lot of improvement from everybody on this unit. So when we start with everybody that played significant snaps on this offensive line last year, there were 6 players, and we're going to go through each player in their PFF grades in terms of run blocking and pass blocking. So Kelvin Banks, who, you know, jumped onto the scene as the Big 12 freshman of the year, he definitely was a superstar, looks like a 3-year player, looks like a top 10 draft pick in 2025, one of the best left tackles in college football. You looked at his run blocking grade for last year, it was a 64.9. I think that's really good for a true freshman, but it's not on the level of elite, right? And if we want to tab Kelvin Banks as an elite left tackle, then I think his average run block grade that was at 65 last year is good for a good player. For an elite player, we want that closer to 70. So I think even Kelvin Banks, who was the superstar of this line last year, has a long way to go in terms of being elite, especially when you talk about run blocking. Pass blocking grade for the season was 77.9. That was really good. Obviously, he jumped on the scene. We saw in week 2 when he held his own against Dallas Turner and Will Anderson. We knew that Kelvin Banks was going to be special, and that continued throughout the remainder of the season. His best game in terms of PFF grade last year, he had an 80 overall grade. It was like actually 82 or 83 was the Kansas game. No surprise there. We dominated Kansas. That game was over in the second quarter. Bijan Robinson broke his personal records for rushing yards and rushing touchdowns in that game, large part because Kelvin Banks was dominant on that left side. When you looked at Hayden Connor last year, his overall run blocking grade was a 50.8. That is not good. His pass blocking grade was 66.5. So that is about average. I would say that's about above average with the run blocking grade, 50.8, leaving a lot to be desired. His best game last year, according to PFF, was Kansas State. Jake Majors, his run blocking grade last year was a 58.3. That is not great, right? Like I said, you want that to be at about 65 or higher, as close to 70 as possible. Now, his pass blocking grade for the season was 81.9. That's really good. Obviously, I just told you that Kelvin Banks' pass blocking grade was 77.9. So Jake Majors was really good in terms of pass blocking in the middle. This offensive line was really good in terms of pass blocking overall, but it was the run blocking that was really concerning and why I'm skeptical to say we have one of the five best offensive line units in the country. His best games were Oklahoma State and Kansas. Oklahoma State, we were really good in the first half, lost that game. And then I told you about Kansas and Bijan Robinson breaking 2 personal records. Cole Hudson was the starter for the majority of the season, and he just was not good, right? I love Cole Hudson, love his family. Hate to talk about him like this on the podcast, but the numbers speak for themselves. He just was not good last year. Run blocking grade, 53.4. That is below average. And that kind of continues the theme of 3 straight interior offensive line players that had a run blocking grade for the season of less than 60. I know that's something as a Longhorn fan that you noticed throughout the season was the interior offensive line was not great, but you had Bijan and Roshan to cover up a lot of those warts. The pass blocking grade for the season for Cole Hudson was 34.7. That's just unacceptable, right? You got to take that off the field, right? That's not good enough to play at the University of Texas. His best game last year was West Virginia. DJ Campbell, who got 129 snaps last year in place of Cole Hudson, was really good. 63.6 run blocking grade. Like I said, you want that closer to 70, but for a true freshman, that's definitely more than acceptable. 83.1 pass blocking grade in limited opportunities, but it shows that when he was able to step in, He was great at pass blocking, as was the rest of the line. A definite upgrade from what we saw from Cole Hudson. And then Christian Jones, 68.6 run blocking grade, the best overall on the team. And then 73.1 pass blocking grade. So you want to see him better as a run blocker as well. I think that's the theme for everybody on the offensive line. When your best overall run blocking grade is 64.9, that's not good, especially when you lose Bijan and Roshan. They're going to have to be a lot better this year. And then in terms of the pass blocking grade, he was 73.1. So he was really good. And everybody outside of Cole Hudson last year was really good in terms of pass blocking. When you look at the averages, the average run blocking grade for our offensive line was 60. So you would want that closer to 70. The average pass blocking grade for the team was 70, and it's probably closer to 75 if you don't weigh it down with Cole Hudson's 34.7 grade. So, and when you talk about Christian Jones, his best game, according to PFF, was Baylor. That's when we ran the ball 22 straight times at the end of the game to win that game. So, you know, I think that Texas has the talent to be one of the top five offensive line units in the country. I think bringing back all five starters is a really good sign to having better offensive line play next year. I thought that the pass blocking was really good last year, as evidenced by the PFF grades. If you can keep that up, that goes a long way to, you know, being a top five unit in the country. But the run blocking just left a lot to be desired. And I need to see a huge jump in terms of the run blocking, especially from the interior offensive line, but also from Kelvin Banks, who we've tabbed as a superstar. We need to see a lot of improvement from the run blocking, especially without Bijan and Roshan, for this offense to operate on all cylinders and to be explosive in 2023. If they can improve drastically in terms of the run blocking while maintaining what they did in terms of the pass blocking last year, then towards the end of the season, I think we can start to talk about this Texas offensive line being a top five unit in the country moving forward. A quick word from Built Bar, and then we're going to talk about Tyrese Hunter. Did we get a sign that he'll be returning to the 40 acres next season? Okay, so I pulled my Built Bar ad, and it's not with me. Anything right now. All right, appreciate y'all's patience. Looking for a delicious snack but don't want all of the sugar and calories? Then you need the best tasting protein bar ever built. You got this. If you're like me and you want to make healthier snacks, you don't want to compromise on taste, I've got a thing for you. Built Bar, Built Puffs. Built Bars are healthy and tasty. Seriously, they taste so amazing you won't think they're you got to try this. What makes Built Bars so good? Well, for starters, they are all covered in 100% real dark chocolate. That's right, real chocolate. And they come in amazing flavors like churro, peanut butter brownie, and cookie cream. I'm not sure how Built Bars taste like a candy bar while maintaining amazing macros. And what's even better is that they are healthy, only 130 calories and 4 grams of sugar with a whopping 17 grams of protein. And now you don't need to wait to get a box. For years, we've been talking about ordering Built Bars at Built.com, but now you can get them at your local Walmart or Sam's Club while still getting your specialty flavors at Built.com. So whether it's Walmart, Sam's Club, or the website, get your Built Bars today. So we've been talking about the Texas basketball team a lot, and, you know, the recent news we've gotten has been good in terms of Zarik Onyema and Kendall Weaver committing in the transfer portal. I spoke yesterday about DJ Rodman being a player of interest in the transfer portal for Rodney Terry and the Texas staff. He committed to USC yesterday to play with Bronny James and Isaiah Collier. So definitely, you know, a target that they were looking at that they didn't get. They're also I don't have my notes in front of me. Forgive me. But there was another player from another school. I think he was third team all MAC last year, 44% three-point shooter. I don't have my notes in front of me, but they're still interested in him as well. But this has been a lot of talk about, you know, Ron Holland and A.J. Johnson decommitting, Tyrese Hunter and Dylan Mitchell in the draft process, Rowan Brumbaugh going to Georgetown, Arterio Morris going to Kansas, and how Rodney Terry and the staff would fill out the roster in the midst of all of that. Now, you did bring in Max Abemus, who was one of the most accomplished scorers in college basketball history, specifically over the last 4 years. You brought in Caden Shedrick, who has real Big 12 Defensive Player of the Year potential and can be your anchor on defense, your rim protector. You brought in Zarik Onyema, who I think can bring a lot of what Kristen Bishop did to this team last year. You brought in Kendall Weaver, who was a very underrated scorer and 40% three-point shooter, a true freshman who won WAC Freshman of the Year at UTA last year. And then you got Brock Cunningham coming back. You got Dylan DeSuda return. So in the midst of the turmoil, I guess, that's happened over the last month and the trials and tribulations Rodney Terry and the staff has gone through, I think they've done a good job of navigating through the storm and putting some really good pieces on this roster heading into next season. And when Tyrese Hunter and Dillon Mitchell declared for the draft, those were not surprises, right? When Tyrese Hunter came to Texas, you felt like he was going to try to put his best foot forward this year to enter the NBA after this season, right? And then Dillon Mitchell, who I think was the fifth-rated prospect coming out of high school, he always had one and done written all over him. And I know Texas fans feel like he didn't show enough offensively to enter the draft. It would benefit him to come back to school. But really, his calling card coming out of high school was always his size, his length, and his defensive versatility. And I think he showed enough of that at Texas, right? Also while dunking the ball, right? To be one of the 60 players drafted to the NBA. So I said earlier, and I don't want to bury the lead, that I feel like there is a really good sign that Tyrese Hunter might return to the 40 acres. And here it is. As we know, all of these basketball players in college are trying to decide what their next move is, right? Whether that be in the transfer portal or entering the NBA draft, trying to see what type of tidbits they're getting, you know, where scouts have them, should they return to school, should they go to another school, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And two events are happening over the next few weeks that give us a good indication on what NBA scouts and decision makers think about these players and lack thereof. So these two events are the NBA Draft Combine and the G League Elite Camp. 78 players have been invited to the NBA Draft Combine. One player from the University of Texas was invited to participate in the NBA Draft Combine. That is Dillon Mitchell, who I just said was the fifth overall prospect coming out of high school last year, was a one-and-done prospect, and in my opinion, will be one of the 60 players drafted, right? He showed enough at Texas, in my opinion, in terms of NBA potential to be one of the top 60 players drafted. Then you have the G League Elite Camp, where 45 prospects are invited to. Only one Texas player got that invite, Serge Ibari Rice, who won National Sixth Man of the Year last year, Big 12 Sixth Man of the Year last year, and really improved his stock coming from New Mexico State to the University of Texas, where they went on the Elite Eight run. So 123 draft prospects have been invited to these two showcases, the NBA Draft Combine and then the G League Elite Camp. Out of 123 prospects, only two came from the University of Texas, Dillon Mitchell to the NBA Draft Combine, Serge Ibari Rice to the G League Elite Camp. If 60 players get drafted every year into the NBA and 123 prospects have been invited to showcase their skills for NBA scouts and decision makers, and Tyrese Hunter is not on either one of these lists, that would tell me that the NBA is not high enough on Tyrese Hunter for Tyrese Hunter to continue to go through the draft process, right? If 60 players get drafted, double that get to work out in front of NBA scouts and decision makers in an official capacity, and your name is not on this list. And when you look at Timmy Allen and Marcus Carr, I think they both objectively were better than Tyrese Hunter last year. And that's no knock on Tyrese Hunter at all. I just think Marcus Carr and Timmy Allen were better basketball players than Tyrese Hunter was last year. Neither one of them are one of the 123 prospects invited to these two showcases, including Tyrese Hunter, right? That tells me that the NBA is not high on Tyrese Hunter, and it would benefit him to come back to the University of Texas. I'm not telling him to come back to the University of Texas because I want to see him in a burnt orange and white jersey, and I want Rodney Terry to fill out this roster, right? If he had legitimate NBA potential, I would definitely want him to go to the NBA. But 123 prospects being invited to the NBA Draft Combine and G League Elite Camp, respectively, and your name is not on either one of those lists, tells me you do not have a really good chance of, one, getting drafted, two, getting invited on a team, whether it's the summer league, or B, just being in the NBA next year, period, right? And so it would seem as though then your best options are returning to the University of Texas to play for another year under Rodney Terry, or going overseas to play basketball. And in my opinion, overseas basketball will always be there, right? I think the best thing for Tyrese Hunter, since he is not going to be at the NBA Draft Combine in the G League Elite Camp, and that tells me pretty loudly that he won't get drafted, is to come back to the University of Texas, play in that off-guard, two-guard, combo guard role next to Max Amos, and try to build on what you did last year individually in terms of development-wise and then team success-wise, getting back to the Elite Eight or further. So if Tyrese Hunter decides to return, which would seem like the likely option right now, which, you know, would be best for Rodney Terry and the staff, and may not be what Tyrese Hunter wants. But like I said, the writing is on the wall that the NBA is not high on Tyrese Hunter at this point. Your roster right now, or at least your rotation, would look like Max Amos at point guard, Tyrese Hunter and Kendall Weaver as your combo guards. Kendall Weaver probably coming off the bench. Brock Cunningham at the small forward. He's likely to come off the bench. Zariq Onyema, not sure if they want to put him at the three and go big, or he's going to come off the bench in that Christian Bishop role. Obviously, Dylan Dessou coming back as your starting power forward, one of the best power forwards in the country. And then Caden Shedrick, like I said, somebody who has real Big 12 defensive player of the year potential. And then you need a versatile wing, somebody like Ron Holland, right? Somebody that can score at the rim and from the three-point line and guard two to three positions, preferably one through three. That's something that Ron Holland would have brought to this team. I think he is a perfect fit for this team. Hopefully they can still bring him in and keep him away from Arkansas or the G League. But I think if you can't get Ron Holland, you need that type of player, right? Somebody that brings versatility on the offensive end and can play off of Max Amos, Tyrese Hunter, you know, Kendall Weaver, Dylan Dessou, whoever it is, and then somebody that can guard multiple positions on defense. And then I think we need another combo guard, kind of how we had last year with Rice, Morris, Tyrese Hunter, and Marcus Carr, right? If we have Max Amos, Tyrese Hunter, and Kendall Weaver, I think you need one more guard that shoot the three, be a secondary playmaker, right? Doesn't have to average 3-4 assists a game, but somebody that can set up your teammates down low, and then also somebody that can defend multiple positions. We know that's a requirement at the guard position for Rodney Terry. So I think Tyrese Hunter coming back would be a really good sign for Texas and the Texas staff. I think Tyrese Hunter needs to come back based on him not being one of the 123 prospects invited to the NBA Draft Combine or the G League Elite Camp. And like I said, he can come back to the 40 acres next year, start next to Max Amos, and, you know, hopefully improve his individual draft stock and, you know, hopefully take this Texas team back to the Elite Eight where they belong. A quick word from our sponsors, and then we're going to talk about the Texas baseball team to close out today's episode. So when we talk about the Texas baseball team, they are now 33-17 on the season. They just played their last midweek game of the regular season, UTA, last night. And, you know, I know they had a lot of opponents this year that weren't up to par, but I think they did a really good job of, I can't remember any, maybe Cal State Fullerton at the beginning of the season. But, you know, Cal State Fullerton has good history in college baseball. But in terms of their midweek opponents, right, the opponents that they were supposed to take care of business against and opponents they weren't supposed to lose to, they did a really good job of beating up on those teams this year. And UTA was no different, 10-5 in this game on Tuesday night. They jumped out to a 4-0 lead. Now, what has been a huge concern for this baseball team, and I think it's a huge concern going into the end of regular season and postseason play, is giving up runs in the ninth inning. That's when your closer should be able to come in. And I know it wasn't necessarily a closer save situation when the ninth inning started because you were up by more than three runs. But the ninth inning should be when, you know, when somebody comes in from that bullpen and just throws fire, right? You should never have to worry about giving up runs in the ninth inning, especially consistently. And now this is something you've done twice against Baylor. This is something you did in the TCU series. And now you've given up three runs in the ninth to UTA. They had two runs all game and you gave them three runs in the ninth. That's the type of stuff that'll get you sent home. They need to figure that out immediately. They had an error defensively, so they allowed five runs, but only four were tasked to the pitchers, four earned runs. The pitchers gave you nine innings, eight hits, three walks, four earned, and four Ks. It's crazy how they only struck out UTA four times and just struck out Kansas like 17 times in one game over the weekend. Like LBJ had 12 Ks by himself. And they come back and only strike out UTA four times in nine innings. But they got the win. They won by five runs. I'm just a sucker for strikeouts and pitching. So, you know, don't mind me. The offense had three doubles, three home runs, and drew seven walks. It almost sounds like they would have more than 10 runs in that scenario. But like I said, the offense has been really good. They do a really good job of putting together really good at-bats. And they can hit, you know, for extra bases with doubles, triples, and home runs. They obviously can hit singles, and they do a good job of taking really good at-bats and passing the baton, drawing walks as well. So when you look at the end of the regular season, they have a weekend series this weekend against San Jose State. And then they end the regular season next weekend with the weekend series against West Virginia. But hopefully, you know, they can play some really good baseball to end the stretch. I think the offense has been good. I think the pitching has been good for the most part. Defense has been good. You did have an error that cost you a run in that game. But just giving up runs in the ninth inning. They're definitely going to have to figure that out. Obviously, you're going to have to figure out what Tanner Witt can give you moving forward. But for the most part, I think this Texas baseball team is playing some really good baseball right now and should be a threat to make some noise in postseason play this year. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Locked On Longhorns, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Tyrese Hunter, come home, brother. Hook 'em. Peace.